So I'm here with Ben Kresseman, director of Sunchoke. And Ben, let me say, this is only your second feature-length directorial film, and it is absolutely gorgeous. So how was it, you know, this being only your second time out of the gate and cranking out something that has this type of quality? What was the process? Kind of walk us through that a bit.
Wow. Well, I mean, first of all, thanks. you know, I think, I mean, it was a much bigger, I mean, you know, both of my films are very small. The first one was really small. I mean, funded off Kickstarter. I think the budget was somewhere around $20,000 by the time it was all said and done. I'm talking end-to-end, including festival submissions and all that. And it was really just a group of friends kind of getting together to see if we could make this thing happen. It was sort of an experiment in can we make a film? But with Sunchoke, it was sort of, you know, can we make this film? And there was definitely a specificity to it. And, you know, I think that brought a particular momentum as well, because we all knew we kind of had our eyes on the prize from the beginning. So it made for a really exciting experience. You know, I mean, I had just enough experience to know that I might be able to handle it by the time it was, you know, by the time we were getting into the swing of it, it was just too exciting to ever really, you know, look away from.
Ben, you mentioned momentum, and with this film, we're dropped right in the thick of things, and the story really just kind of kicks off from the get-go, but we're left to pick up little bits and pieces throughout the movie so that we can kind of form the narrative. Was that something that was intentional from the start, or did that kind of roll out organically as you guys filmed this movie?
No, that was definitely part of the design from the beginning. I mean, a big part of the approach from the start was to try to stay as close to Janie, the main character's subjective experience of the film, as we could. And that was going to mean employing dream logic. It was going to mean kind of shading the boundary between reality and fantasy and not necessarily jumping around in time, but not necessarily being bound to any sort of specific linear sort of progress or course of progress.
Yeah, I think you're successful with that for sure. Another thing I found interesting about the movie is that, at least me personally, I have a hard time kind of figuring out who I'm supposed to feel empathy for. You always go back and forth with, like, well, maybe it's this character or maybe it's that one. But at the end of the day, most of them, it's in this weird gray area. Was that by design?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, I mean, certainly Savannah, the character played by Sarah Mulcahy-Lane, I think is pretty much entirely innocent. She's really the only one in the film who, you know, you don't have to really consider motives and consider where they're coming from. But I think in the case of both Janie and Irma, the caretaker, you're looking at two people who I think both believe that they're doing what's right for themselves and for, you know, for what they feel is, you know, I mean, the caretaker feels that she needs to do whatever is required to take care of this, you know, her ward. And Janie has to do whatever she can to become Janie in spite of a really intense, isolated experience and, you know, being largely unable to communicate or connect with the outside world.
Yeah, we definitely see a lot of different states of mental being, I suppose we could say. And at the heart of the film, or the plot, without giving really anything away, we could say that there is this element of holistic healing, which personally I'm not sure I've ever seen in a horror film. Was there any motive or reason that you kind of wanted to explore this side of holistic healing?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I in a sense, the movie really started out as a character study, and I was looking at these two women and their relationship and their lives in this house together. And, you know, I grew up here in Los Angeles, Certainly like holistic health, yoga, you know, a focus on well-being is, you know, a feature of the city, if not, you know, in even sort of like a caricature-y way, but like, you know, it's an interesting, it's a really interesting kind of tableau to work with. And I was doing research into, and yoga specifically, and I came across a particular standing pose that was, you know, sort of for balance. And if you didn't focus sort of fully on the pose and, you know, maintaining your balance, you would fall. And I thought, okay, that's an interesting start, but, you know, what am I finding so interesting about that? And what I realized was that if somebody forces you to do that, and they say, you have to stand in this pose for an hour, every time you fall off, you're going to start over again, at a certain point, that's going to start to feel a whole lot like torture. And that created a really interesting kind of duality in my head of, you know, the things that we do to take care of ourselves can also be the things that, you know, can potentially destroy us.
So, Ben, the composition of this movie is a lot of wild things. We're talking about blurred images. There's just droning tones, unexplained flashbacks. So what was the process of gathering up a team that was able to successfully make this blend an uncomfortable yet beautiful movie?
Well, you know, I mean, a lot goes into it, obviously. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, after me, it really starts with Matthew Rudenberg, our DP. You know, he approached the film with such a specific kind of mindset, and we had a great opportunity to spend, you know, a lot of time breaking down the script and really figuring out what the visual vocabulary was going to be. And so I think that was the first step, was knowing what it all looks like, knowing that in spite of the fact that we were making a dark film, that it would be almost entirely sunlit. And, you know, what happens when you stare into the sun, you get blowouts, you don't see, you know, you'll lose your field of vision, you know, things, a lot of interesting things can happen in the sun. And certainly horror films are sort of historically predicated on shadow and darkness and sort of what's just beyond the line of, you know, that which you can't see. But there was something really interesting to me about the challenge of, you know, can we create a version of horror out in the sunlight? So again, you know, Matthew Rudenberg, the DP, really understood that, really had an exciting approach to it, and came with a number of sort of interesting tricks up his sleeve as well to really help us achieve some shots that, you know, otherwise we would never have been able to pull off. And you know, I mean, another big ingredient, as you mentioned, is sort of the ingredients of all this and the drones and whatnot, I mean, is our composer, Brian Holland, who records under the name Boombip. And he was involved from a really early stage as well. And that, I think, was a big part of it. He really connected with the script, and we got a chance to really talk about it and talk about references and talk about what the sort of musical auditory component of the film would be. And it was a really remarkable process, actually. He started sending stuff, and it was like he was keyed in right away. There was very little, oh, this isn't working, you know. And so the atmosphere just builds and builds. And then, you know, I mean, there's lots of fine-tuning that you do in post-production. I mean, we had a great sound design team. And I think for a movie like this and horror movies in general, sound is arguably as or more important as the visuals. And so I think that's a really, you know, an important component to it as well. But, you know, as you said, it's about drawing together a team. It's about drawing together as many elements as you're able to kind of wield comfortably to create this, you know, this end product or whatever.
It really does come together beautifully. Now, it's worth noting that there's not a lot of gore or violence in this movie. There are a few instances, but that's not really what it kind of hangs its hat on. There's a lot more, and this made me way more uncomfortable, situations of implied violence and just strange things going on. Was that an instance of just being practical with the budget, or is that a style of horror that you're just really into?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, it's, I think practicality is a nice kind of bonus, but there's real, I mean, that which you can't see is always more terrifying than what you can. And certainly we have some pretty intense moments of gore, not a ton. But as you said, yeah, the stuff that's implied, the stuff that's off screen, the stuff that we're left to imagine in our own, it's always going to be more terrifying. And so for me, anytime I was able to take advantage of a moment like that, it was a great opportunity.
Yeah, there was one instance on my first viewing of the film where there was no sound, not really any reaction other than just my jaw just hanging open. I was just dumbfounded. So well done, sir.
Thank you very much.
So let's take a moment to talk about Sarah Hagen, our lead who plays Janie. I think she might have the market on crazy eyes. I'm not sure a look or stare has ever made me feel quite as uncomfortable as the one that she puts on throughout this movie. Was that a big factor, that look, in casting Sarah Hagen?
Well, certainly, you know, I mean, what we could see from her performances in the auditions, starting from very early on, is she was bringing a real intense interior life to the character. This was not somebody who was, I mean, she's not the most talkative person, this character, you know, and so there was going to be a lot of the performance in her eyes and in her sort of muscles, and I think that's something that Sarah really took to and just ran with. And I mean, watching her on set, I mean, I totally identify with, you know, what you're saying as far as being unnerved by her eyes, because you know, I'm in the middle of all the chaos of the set, and you look at it, and it's, in that moment, all that sort of disappears, and it's like, yes, this is really, really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think that was super important for this film. For anyone who hasn't seen it, she's really the driving force of the entire movie.
I can't say enough amazing things about Sarah Hagen. I want to see her in every movie.
As more and more eyes get on Sunchoke, the praise is almost universal across the board. So, with all this momentum, what's the next big step for you as a writer-director?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm working on a couple different projects. One, I'm, you know, sort of maybe moving a little faster on than another. It's a sort of, I guess it's kind of a backwards thriller. It's a bit more visceral, as opposed to Sunchoke psychological, which I'm excited, you know, it's I wanted to present myself with, you know, a new challenge. So, I mean, I still want to continue to make character driven films, but for me, each time out should be a challenge and something new to try to learn from.
That sounds really fun, Ben. I really look forward to seeing what you do in the future. And I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about Sunchoke.
Awesome. Thank you so much.